I don't get it.
I visited the occupied territories, Russell, during the first Intifada. I cried every day for 2 weeks.
Been featured by Trump.
I love the Muslims. I think they're great people.
Donald Trump, the Jr.
Hey guys, Don Jr. here. I'm going live.
And so we get these kind of propped up people like Ben Shapiro who...
Israel kills enough of these sons of bitches that this is not a problem.
Jordan Peterson. What happened to Jordan Peterson when he started working for Ben Shapiro at the Daily Wire?
Here's the logical conclusion of that. You're your own church. You're your own God.
Three lies currently being told about Palestine. Number one.
Assalamu alaikum. Greetings of peace. Welcome to the Dean Shaw Media, your host. Subscribe if you haven't already. Hit that notification bell so you don't miss exciting programs like this one. My next guest, Keith Woods. He's an independent news source, commentator, analysis. He's debunking much of the fake news that's out there, so much so that he's reporting has even been featured by Trump.
I love the Muslims. I think they're great people.
Muslim? Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. No problem with it. Would I consider putting a Muslim American in my cabinet? Absolutely no problem with that.
You think that Muslims pose a danger to this country?
I love the Muslims. I think they're great people.
Himself, that's right, Donald Trump, the Jr.
Hey guys, Don Jr. here. I'm going live tonight. We have an exciting new episode.
He's brought to light much of the atrocity propaganda that the likes of Jordan Peterson are promoting. And also his boss, his higher up, Ben Shapiro. And it's really unfortunate and sad to see that much of the stuff that's being put out there also by our Christian conservative friends that we're trying to build actually a relationship with to unite against much of the evil that's affecting us, our families, and our children.
Does anyone know what a drag queen is?
Leave our kids alone! Leave our kids alone! Leave our kids alone!
Man walked into the women's bathroom at McDonald's.
My daughter goes into those bathrooms and no man needs to be in there. You understand me? You are a man. You are created as a man. You are a man. Start acting like a man.
So without further ado, let's bring out our special guest, Keith Woods.
This is the Dean Show.
Girl, I love you very much. I want all the work that you're doing.
When I was ready to talk about it, I would only talk to you.
And I was explaining how much respect I have for the faith of Islam.
Welcome to the Dean Show. The Dean Show.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Good to be here.
Good to have you with us. How are you, Keith? How's it going?
Yeah, doing pretty good. Like you said, it's been full frontal assault the last few days. There's a lot of information war going on right now.
Okay, before we get into your interaction with the Trump himself, the Junior.
Hey guys, Don Junior here.
I want to go ahead and get your feedback on this short clip. It's actually by a Holocaust survivor himself, as when he was a child, who really speaks about what's going on. So instead of me and you just getting into it, I want to let it come from a Holocaust survivor himself, and then we'll kick it off. How's that?
Sounds good.
And I found out that it wasn't exactly like that. That in order to make this Jewish dream a reality, we had to visit a nightmare on the local population. And there's no way you could have ever created a Jewish state without oppressing and expelling the local population. Jewish Israeli historians have shown without a doubt that the expulsion of the Palestinians was persistent, it was pervasive, it was cruel, it was murderous, and with deliberate attempt. So that's what's called the Nakba in Arabic, the disaster or the catastrophe. There's a law that you cannot deny the Holocaust. But in Israel, you're not allowed to mention the Nakba, even though it was at the very basis of the foundation of the state. I visited the occupied territories, Russell, during the first Intifada. I cried every day for 2 weeks at what I saw. The brutality of the occupation, the petty harassment, the murderousness of it, or cutting down of Palestinian olive groves, the denial of water rights, the humiliations, And this went on, and it's much worse now than it was then. It's the longest ethnic cleansing operation in the 20th and 21st centuries. I could land in Tel Aviv tomorrow and demand citizenship under the right law of the right of return. But my Palestinian friend in Vancouver, Hannah Kawas, who was born in Jerusalem, can't even visit. Now, if I have the right to return after 2,000 years, how come Hannah hasn't got the right to return after 70 years? So then you have these miserable people packed into this horrible, people call it the world's largest outdoor prison, which is what it is. You don't have to support Hamas policies to stand up for Palestinian rights. That's a complete falsity. If you take the worst thing you can say about Hamas, multiply it by 1,000 times, and it still will not meet the Israeli repression and killing and dispossession of Palestinians.
Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a perspective we don't get much in the West. Everything is in the context of whatever the most recent event is. All of the focus is on a specific Hamas crime. And we're totally denied the context of what's causing this violence. The fact is there are over 600,000 illegal Israeli settlers on Palestinian land. Tens of thousands of homes have been demolished by these illegal settlers. In the case of Gaza, this is an area that's 5 miles wide. That's a morning jog for some people. 25 miles long, with 2.1 million people packed in there. It's one of the most densely populated areas on Earth. Half of them are children. And these people really have been denied any way of advancement here. I mean, what are they supposed to do? You know, the whole conversation, like I said, in the West has become about Hamas terrorism. And the focus of how Israelis have suffered at the hands of Hamas. But these people are under a brutal occupation. They're under complete blockade. The Israeli government has turned down multiple truces from Hamas. You know, whatever you want to say about how extreme Hamas is, they have offered truces in exchange for ending the blockade, which have been rejected. And these people are in an absolutely desperate situation. And it is funny, you know, when you hear discussions of the Nakba, we're getting all this atrocity propaganda right now. Ben Shapiro was retweeting a claim that there was pregnant women having their babies ripped from them. No evidence for this claim at all. But a lot of this stuff actually applies to the Nakba. There were children ripped from their parents during the Nakba. There were mass rapes. There were murders of civilians. Don't take my word for it. I mean, we've seen footage circulating this week of former Israeli soldiers.
This occupation is an ongoing criminal act of war crimes after war crimes. It was a psychological and a very difficult process, but once you realize that you are part of a terrorist organization, you understand that you have to say no, you have to take the consequences, because I say that Israel is an apartheid state, because I say that my government and my military commanders are war criminals.
ממיים אותי לעוד יחידה ולעוד יחידה ולעוד יחידה, מתזזים אותי בצבא, ואף אחד לא לוקח אחריות, אף אחד לא מטפל בי! ואני מתכונן! אני צועק, אני משתין בלילה מפוסט טראומה! הוא בא אליי ואומר לי, למה הרגת אותי? למה הרגת אותי? אתה יכול לפקוד ככה ביום אחרי שיש לך ימים כאלה? אתה יכול לאכול? אתה יכול בכלל להצליח בחיים? ואני הייתי מועמד לטייס.
That look back on this with glee of how they use flamethrowers on Palestinian civilians, how they raped 16-year-olds. Many of them are proud of this. So unfortunately, it's a very one-sided conversation in the West. But the context that's always left out is the fact that, you know, these people are being denied statehood, they're being denied basic necessities of existence, and it's forcing this brutal situation.
I want to go back to what you were saying. I want people to imagine. And I just heard the story yesterday that someone that a friend of mine, a family member knows, that they got word, this was before everything kicked off now, that someone, their family home, they had people coming in. They're about to take over. So you have to just get on a plane and get from over here to over there. I want people to imagine, like, you got your home that's been passed down from generation to generation, and it's been in your bloodline, your family. And then you got these illegal, this is by international, they're violating international law. This is something that now, can you just imagine? This is your home. It's your property. Imagine a home you're living in right now. Just somebody just came in and just you put you on the street. I mean, it's hypocrisy to think that some people would, you know, just sit there. You ever seen that movie, Red Dawn?
I haven't seen that, no.
I recommend it's with Patrick Swayze. Maybe this is not from your generation, but this is an older movie. And Americans were under attack, I think, by Russians or whatnot in the movie. And then they can see they're coming out to, you know, protect their homeland and whatnot. And it seems very hypocritical. Like when people, you've seen videos with the Muslim lady and then the Jewish settler said, hey, if I didn't steal it, somebody else would.
You are stealing my house.
And if I don't steal it, someone else is going to steal it.
I don't know. Did you ever see that video?
Yeah, I saw that. And the guy has a New York accent. He's not even from the region.
So what I'm saying is just, you got to put yourself, have some empathy, some sympathy. I mean, me as a Muslim, you're a Christian?
Yeah, you can say I'm kind of a lapsed Christian. Culturally Christian.
Yeah, but I mean, as a Muslim, this is something, according to Prophet Muhammad, you know, we believe is the last final messenger, you know, killing any innocent human being life. I just want to put this on there. So I don't know if you've ever seen this. There's engagement before the Geneva Convention. You know, you're not to kill any innocent men, women, and children, mutilating bodies, cutting down. What you see in Gaza, it's just like a total annihilation, like all buildings, you know, if innocent civilians are just being, you know, just bombed, annihilated. People can see, you know, and this is one of those things that you actually with Trump, he actually retweeted one of your tweets, and you made a comment after that. He said they are respectfully raping women, shooting concert goers, and kidnapping the children. They shoot and blow cut. And then you, because you tweeted some, you reported here. Can you go ahead and get into this? You reported of the respect of the churches.
All I did was post this video of as retaliation. The Israeli forces bombed this very old mosque in Gaza, one of the largest mosques there, I believe. And I just pointed out that, look, if we're talking about standards of military action and so on, and how terrible the violence is on both sides, well, you know, Hamas did give orders to their fighters to respect churches and monasteries. And then you see the behavior of the IDF. They're happy to target religious sites. Got a huge backlash, but no one actually said it was wrong. as you see with Trump himself, he didn't actually say it was wrong. But, you know, again, this is stuff that's not highlighted. It's totally different when you have people are lashing out basically against being in an open air concentration camp. And in a desperate situation where they're slowly being ethnically cleansed versus an occupying army that is now targeting civilians, as far as we can tell. Seems to be carpet bombing of Gaza. There's no way to believe that these are sort of precision military strikes. And it's just so ironic because I remember when the Ukraine war started and we were getting this footage of buildings being bombed in Ukraine, and Putin was being called a war criminal for this, and there was all sorts of allegations of civilian shelling, and these were war crimes. Very little evidence for those specific claims, but I mean, we're witnessing it happening every day now in Gaza. Mm-hmm. That's acceptable. It's acceptable if the Zionist state does it.
I just want to make a caveat here, just as a Muslim, and Muslim simply means as we go along, I'll just educate the audience, because they hear some of these words and they're like, you know, they have associations that are totally the opposite. A Muslim is simply one, by definition, who submits his will to the creator of heavens and earth. So as a Muslim, I don't know about much of these groups in there. Like most Muslims, we're just, you know, so Hamas or whatever, some of these other, you know, the groups. So what they're trying to do is like this lady here, she sees a Palestinian flag. And I think you also, I don't know if you posted on this, but you had people who can identify with what they say is an occupation from Russia. So you see a lot of Americans putting Ukrainian flags. But as soon as this lady sees a Palestinian flag, she thinks, okay, right away in her mind, they're programming. She's connected with Hamas or who some other group out there. And she thinks right away they program you to think like, oh, you're supporting terrorism. You're this, that, and the other. I mean, it's just absurd. So have a look at this.
Streets, post it. Author Lauren Wise. That's my Instagram. Author Lauren Wise. You should be ripped and dragged through the streets in front of your kids. That's what you
Okay,
do.
Thank you.
You're addressing Hamas. a terrorist.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for your name.
No.
Thank you. Have a good nice day.
I think you should all of you idiots who think that it's Palestine against Israel.
Don't
I just don't understand. This is what you see something like, I just don't get it, Keith.
Well, I mean, the media is totally one-sided. You know, we have a Zionist-controlled media in the West. You know, they preach tolerance and diversity and open borders and all these very like left-wing values to us in the West. Comes to Israel, they support this you know, far-right Likud government. They support the ethnic cleansing. They support repressing this non-white population. It's a complete double standard. This is never explained. You have the head of the ADL out there, Jonathan Greenblatt. Purpose of the ADL is supposed to be to fight racism. They tried to get Tucker Carlson fired from Fox News because he was speaking out against immigration in the U.S. At the same time, they're supporting this far-right Zionist government in Israel. And we have protesters on the streets of New York. I don't know if you saw this footage, but there was a protest in New York by these people that were sympathetic to Israel, and they were literally calling for the complete genocide of Arabs and wiping out of Gaza.
The response should be from Netanyahu and the military to Gaza.
All Palestinians, all of them. Not one left from the river to the sea, Palestine will be deceased.
And Israel need to do like this. You see? Now Gaza. Like this. Gaza need to do like this. Or like this, but all this Jewish. Two options.
What do you think the response should be to Gaza?
We gotta wipe them off the talking about every planting them like a parking lot.
Yeah,
they're planting them out once and for all.
Nothing else you can do.
I think now it's the time that we need to erase Gaza.
Jonathan Greenblatt is silent on that because Greenblatt and the ADL, of course, are themselves Zionist and they support the Zionist entity. So we see this double standard across the media. It's never questioned. The pro-Israel position is always taken. And unfortunately, you know, people in the West get that propaganda from all sides.
Going back to your interaction with Trump, Donald Trump Jr., you pointed out something.
What I did respond to Trump Jr. with is, you know, he's portraying this as, because he wants people in the West to be sympathetic. So it's, you know, it's this kind of Muslim versus Christian conflict. But I said to him, well, how come you don't speak out about the treatment of Christians in Israel? Because just in the past few weeks, we've had multiple stories. There was a Christian cemetery in Jerusalem that was smashed up by Jewish settlers. There was a church in Haifa that was occupied by these Jewish extremist groups. They've been forcing out Christian and Muslim worshippers out of their holy sites in the Holy Land with the support of the IDF, the support of the Likudnik government. And we've seen multiple videos in recent months and weeks of these Jewish settlers spitting on Christians. As they're doing the Stations of the Cross through Jerusalem, you see these Jewish groups spitting on Christians. Now, you could say, oh, that's an isolated incident, you know, every country has its extremists, right? But the problem is, in the Israeli government, you have people that are sympathetic to this. The Israeli National Security Minister went on Israeli State TV and defended that. He said, look, it's an old Jewish tradition to spit on Christians. You know, we should keep that in mind when we talk about this. We shouldn't condemn them too much.
עוד לא הגיב על האירוע הזה, התבטאות שלו כאן ברשת בית, אם אולי עוזרת להבין למה.
דודי, קודם כל יש מנהג יהודי קדום, שכשעוברים ליד מנזר או ליד כומר יורקים, אפשר להסכים או לא להסכים, אבל כאשר יורקים לצד, אני לא חושב שזה מבטא.
So these are the kinds of people in the Israeli government. And, you know, the background to this that people are missing as well is, none of this happens in a vacuum, and there's provocations on both sides, certainly. But in recent weeks, these provocations have really increased in Jerusalem. And there are these extremist Jewish groups that want to build the third temple to fulfill their prophecy on the site of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which you can correct me, but I believe that's like the third holy site in the world for Muslims.
Yes.
So this is obviously very, very incendiary.
For the reestablishment of the third temple, there will be a third temple, or already active. The Temple Institute in Jerusalem is active.
And there's multiple groups like this that are openly working for this, which would create a huge conflict. One is the Temple Institute.
Is the third temple being rebuilt? I don't have to guess about that. Now, I've been to the Temple Institute in Jerusalem myself, and I can tell you that all of the furniture is already prepared, the plans are already in place, and now, for the first time in millennia, they are making plans to rebuild the temple. This is a major development.
Who, its leader of 30 years, actually did a podcast about this the other day, Rabbi Chaim Richman, and he said that Christians in the West should be worshiping all Jews.
I just want to say this to our Christian friends, mm-hmm. you know, just to call it as it is and say it straight out, you know, you guys are worshiping one Jew. That's a mistake. You should be worshiping every single one of us, because we all die for your sins every single day. And that's exactly what's going on here. Yeah. We're all God's firstborn. We're dying for your sins right now, because the Jewish people in the land of Israel are the bulwark right. against the orcs. Mm-hmm. Okay, the orcs are coming not to a theater near you, but to your home.
Again, very extremist, like supremacist statements. He said that Israel was defending the world against the orcs, and he was just casually referring to Arabs as orcs. It's like a total supremacist. And these are the kind of extremist groups that are driving this. You know, they're trying to, this Temple Institute is like trying to breed this red heifer. They're using like embryo selection. It's really weird stuff, trying to fulfill these Talmudic prophecies. And they've been exacerbating this a lot. You know, they were sprinkling blood on the site of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, kind of preparing the way for fulfilling these prophecies and doing the sacrifice. And the problem is, you know, it would be one thing if these were just some weird isolated cult, right? You have that in every country. America has crazy Christian cults that protest funerals and stuff, right? But they're very much on the fringe. But the problem is, these people get the support of the IDF. When they storm Al-Aqsa Mosque and force worshippers out, the IDF protects them.
Hundreds of ultranationalist Jews are carrying out incursions into the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex in occupied East Jerusalem. Big crowds of mostly young settlers raised provocative slogans and entered the mosque compound for a third day on Tuesday to mark a season of Jewish holidays. They're being escorted by the Israeli police.
The tensions have been rising here because during Sukkot, this week-long holiday, ultranationalist Jews have been entering the Temple Mount, which they call the Temple Mount, which others call the Al-Aqsa compound, in larger than usual numbers.
And when they make these extremist statements and they say that all non-Jews should be worshiping them as some kind of ubermenschen.
Just to call it as it is and say it straight out, you know, you guys are worshiping one Jew. That's a mistake. You should be worshiping every single one of us.
People in the Israeli government defend them. So if we want to talk about extremism, or we're always getting told about white supremacy in the West, right? The biggest problem ever is white supremacy. Well, what about the supremacy that's driving this conflict, where you have Jewish supremacists within the Israeli government? You can go through, look at the members of the Israeli Knesset, multiple members, cabinet members of the Likud government have expressed their desire to build a third temple, which means eradicating these Christian and Muslim holy sites in the area, because they have to destroy all these idols, as they consider them, to fulfill the prophecy, which means demolishing this mosque that has a very sacred place for Islam. This is a totally extremist position, but it's accepted as normal increasingly in the discourse in Israel, amongst Israelis, and again, never reported on in the West.
Hmm. Back to what you were discussing here, that today we are witnessing the creation of atrocity propaganda in real time. What is atrocity propaganda, and how has it been used to win support war? Are we seeing that with much of this here? Is this an example of it? And much of what these people such as Ben Shapiro, Jordan Peterson, and the Trump himself, Donald Trump, the Jr., are sharing?
Three lies currently being told about Palestine. Number one.
40 babies were beheaded. This is completely false. No evidence has been provided for this. The claim comes from this journalist during a walk and talk. She makes the claim saying,
I see in the distance more bodies being covered. Babies. Their heads cut off.
Later in a tweet, however, she admits that she did not see bodies, but heard a soldier talking about it. Number two, people were raped. Also false. There is no evidence of this whatsoever.
Much of the atrocity propaganda that you're talking about, and you've debunked a lot of this stuff. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've been trying to keep ahead of this. I expected this kind of thing to come out because this is what they always do in times of conflict. And I would just say to Muslims as well, you know, you see all of these kind of conservative commentators in the West that are promoting this stuff. These are really AstroTurf propped up people. You know, a big part of this is that there's been so much censorship across social media that conservatives and nationalists and patriotic people in the West that oppose wars for Israel, that oppose the Zionist agenda, they're just censored off these platforms. So they don't really get a chance to push back. And so we get these kind of propped up people like Ben Shapiro who...
Israel kills enough of these sons of bitches that this is not a problem. Whenever anyone suggests that Israel is willfully killing civilians, that is the most ignorant, bigoted, anti-Semitic bullshit ever said. There cannot be a ceasefire. Anyone who calls for a ceasefire is a terrorist sympathizer under these circumstances.
You know, he doesn't care so much about American heritage or culture, but he uses his last video to try and raise funds for the IDF. He doesn't represent the average American. These people don't represent the average person in the West. But I certainly expected to see this kind of atrocity propaganda. And in that thread, I go through the history of this. You know, it's very interesting. One of the first examples of this was a 1641 rebellion of the Irish against English rule. And you saw these reports in Britain and the English Parliament and the early version of the press where they were talking about the Irish rebels were ripping babies from pregnant women. And, you know, they were torturing women and children and all this kind of thing. And these reports were used to justify a pretty brutal crackdown. And later Cromwell executing prisoners invoked this. And it's incredible. You see, like, identical kinds of stories now when you see Ben Shapiro to his 6.1 million followers retweeting the claim of women being ripped from pregnant children by Palestinians. So the playbook actually hasn't changed much in all those centuries. But we saw some recent examples of this specifically related to the Middle East as well. I mean, when the US was justifying its attack on Iraq with the first Gulf War, there was this famous testimony by this Kuwaiti girl who was 15 who said that she had witnessed babies being pulled from incubators by Iraqi soldiers and left to die on the ground. And the first Bush invoked this a lot in justifying the war. These are baby killers, these Iraqi army, they rip babies from incubators, right? Who could oppose baby killers? Who could oppose fighting baby killers, rather? It turned out this girl was actually the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador to the U.S., and this campaign had been organized by a front group, a Kuwaiti public relations committee that was actually run by an American PR firm. So the entire thing was fake. The entire thing, her testimony was pre-planned. They invented this story because it was good atrocity propaganda. And note that they always go for the baby killers. They always go for the children, right? Who could oppose people that want to fight baby killers? And the point of these stories is to dehumanize the other side. And it's very important to the Zionist cause. Because the way they fight these wars is they target civilian populations. And if you want to justify that, you have to invoke some kind of collective guilt on these people. You have to say that these standard sort of Western ideas that have been adopted internationally about rules of war and civilian engagement and just war, these don't apply. Because actually this entire group of people are guilty and they're guilty of this collective evil. And the most obvious way you can invoke that, that everyone is going to agree is just morally beyond the pale is targeting of children. And what do we see yesterday? We see this claim, 40 beheaded babies. The source was Israeli news network. I've yet to see any verification for this. It's been out 24 hours now. Supposedly the Israeli army said that they have no information about this. But this went all across Western social media. And then we were just getting story after story like this. There was a picture that was supposedly of Israeli corpses and someone identified that they were actually IDF body bags, which suggested they were Hamas fighters. A video that Donald Trump Jr. posted that I actually got a community note and kind of fact checked them, which was kind of funny. But he was posting this video of a room full of corpses and people had just shot them up. And he claimed that a friend in Israel sent him this and told him that this was what Hamas fighters did. the dead people were clearly Arabs. And we traced the source of this video. It was from 2015. So all this stuff is going around social media. No one even knows where it's from, what the source is. But they're basically just looking for anything they can find to stick. And we've heard all this about, you know, mass rapes, this thing with the rave. And again, you trace the sources for this. What's the source of Ben Shapiro was posting this as well, that there was 240 people raped at this rave, raped and killed. Well, you know, am I a terrorist sympathizer because I say I'd like to see some evidence of this? So far, what I've seen as far as evidence for that is it was like a one eyewitness report. So one person claimed this. We've seen no photo evidence. You know, it's 2023. Everyone has a camera phone. Especially these young people at raves in Israel, there's no photo evidence, there's no video evidence, there's no corroborating evidence, there isn't even a second eyewitness that reports this. And just increasingly, these stories get debunked, not within hours, but within minutes. But they still reach millions of people because you have these centralized Zionist influencers in these networks that prop each other up and push this out there, and they do it in a way that they know will appeal to a Western audience. As far as the rave goes, I mean, I saw footage yesterday that there was actually Israeli police at the rave that engaged in a firefight with the Hamas fighters. And the claim was they were using the ravers as human shields. Now, I don't know if that's true, but certainly they were there covering with them and between the crossfire. So it wasn't as clear-cut a picture as they just descended on and attacked all of these civilians. But that's not even to defend that specific action, but it's just to say that we're not getting the full story here. And people are putting this out without fact-checking it, without any standard of evidence or investigative journalism. And it's because they support this agenda. It's because these people are bought and paid for by powerful Zionist influences. In the case of Ben Shapiro, you know, he said his loyalty to Israel his loyalty to the U.S. comes from the fact that they support Israel so much. And these people have a clear agenda, and it's clear that they are misleading their audiences. Mm-hmm. We tried to push back against it, but it's just such a, like I said, a full frontal assault on the information warfare front.
I don't know if you heard of UFC fighter, one of the legends of the UFC, Jake Shields. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he was following you before. I recommended that he follows you and for some balanced, fair reporting. And he's also somebody who is discussing what we're talking about, much of these fake videos. It's amazing how much propaganda and fake videos we are seeing online. Social media is making it easier for us to direct lies, but imagine how much fake history we are taught. He even goes deeper, despite that many countries will throw you in jail for questioning history. Soon they will need to pass laws questioning current events. So it's... He's someone also, you mentioned this term astroturfing. Can you go ahead and explain, you know, most people don't know what that term means, but this is really important that people know this term astroturfing, what that actually is.
Yeah, astroturfing is when a powerful interest like props up a kind of fake entity to represent a cause, presenting it as something else. Now, the perfect example is what I talked about with the Kuwaiti baby story.
Yes.
Is you had this Kuwaiti public affairs committee that was supposedly this kind of neutral committee that's just reporting on what's going on in Kuwait. It's actually run by a PR firm that is specifically like designing strategies for how do we get the American public to support a war in Iraq. That's the perfect example of astroturfing. Mm-hmm. Now, what you have to realize about political discourse in the West is it's entirely astroturfed. And I would say specifically on the right, because when people gravitate to, you know, right-wing or you could say conservative beliefs in the West, I think they tend much more to have my instincts. You know, I want to preserve my identity, my heritage. I'm Irish. I share the views of the majority of Irish people. You know, I don't want to lose my nation to this liberal, globalist, multicultural way of life. I want to preserve the things about Ireland that I value. And I think that's how most Europeans feel. They're really not interested in conflicts in the Middle East and you know, sending weapons over to use on Palestinians. I mean, this is a hard sell for the average person. What happens is you look at the conservative movement and you look at like Charlie Kirk, who's the head of TPUSA, this big conservative students movement in the US, and he's funded by Zionist billionaires. You look at Ben Shapiro, and he's an ardent Zionist. He declares his loyalty to Israel on every show. He's raising money for the IDF. His employee is Jordan Peterson, What happened to Jordan Peterson when he started working for Ben Shapiro at the Daily Wire?
Here's the logical conclusion of that. You're your own church. You're your own God.
You know, this was a guy who had a huge audience, captive audience of young people. He taught them meaning. He taught them that there's something wrong with liberalism. There's something wrong with this liberal individualism that's being given to you. And people gravitated to that. And then what did he do? He joined the Daily Wire and he took trips to Israel. And there was pictures of him having dinner with Ben Shapiro and Benjamin Netanyahu. And then he was given these phone-in interviews with Netanyahu. And now he's on Twitter saying, give them hell, Netanyahu. And he's telling people we need to go after Iran. He's pushing the Zionist propaganda. And it's like you can go down the list of all of these big conservative influencers that are propped up. The editor of Breitbart, people might be familiar with Breitbart. This was a publication that became very popular during the kind of first Trump movement. And it does represent that kind of populist, Trumpist energy. The editor of it is a guy called Joel Pollack. And he came on Twitter after taking a break for the Sabbath. He came on the weekend. And he said that Gaza needs to be flattened. People there need to be wiped out. So I think clearly his identity, his loyalty is more to Israel than to the United States, because he's never made statements that strong about securing America's borders. But he's very concerned about securing Israel's borders. And you can even look up, you can still find this online. Breitbart, there's a headline that says Breitbart, founded in America, made in Israel. And there's a picture of the founders of Breitbart in Israel in a meeting with Benjamin Netanyahu. And the idea for Breitbart was literally like conceived and planned in Israel. And I can keep going through the list. We have even, you look at like the intellectual influences on the right. Like I said, there was this kind of populist, Trumpist movement, Brexit, all this kind of stuff was happening in 2016. And there was this question, like, where is this energy going to go? Because Trump was certainly in his rhetoric. I mean, as president, he was as Zionist as any president. But in his rhetoric, he talked about things like ending these foreign wars. And there was a mood of that. Let's move away from the neoconservatism. Let's move towards America first, not getting involved in these foreign entanglements. But what happened? You had this thing called national conservatism appear. And this was going to be the new philosophy of the right and the West. And you have all of these people like Viktor Orban and Tucker Carlson speak at the conferences for national conservatism. Well, who runs the national conservatism? It's run by this thing called the Burkean Institute, by a guy called Yoram Hazony, who wrote this book, The Virtues of Nationalism. And he was kind of telling people in the West, okay, you can have a little bit of nationalism, you can have a bit of your own identity. But he also had a big defense of Zionism in that book. And he works in Israel. He's a university professor living in Israel. And he's telling people in the West, this is how your nationalism should be. This is how you're allowed to be conservative, and tying it to Zionism. So the question is, like, why are we in the West? Why do we need a guy in Israel to work out this philosophy of what it means to be a Westerner, to what it means to be a nationalist in the West? Why do we have Ben Shapiro telling conservatives in America to send their money to a foreign country? But it's like you go down the list. I mentioned Breitbart. Again, you can look this up. The current one of the main editors there, or this, rather the, sorry, I'm confused. I'm thinking of Prager University. Prager University, which is this big channel you may have seen on YouTube, and again, it's one of the biggest influencers of conservative discourse. They get millions of views on their videos. They kind of teach young people this is what it means to be conservative. This is what it means to be on the right. And they have multiple videos like defending the IDF, defending Israel. This is why you have to support Israel. Their CEO literally worked for Israeli intelligence. I mean, she's literally like an Israeli intelligence spy. So this is who's controlling this centralized, astroturfed conservative movement in the West. And now I can go on there and I can race you these people and I get 30 million views in a week. And, you know, I'm just a guy with, you know, just people that enjoy my content support me. I have no institutional support. And there are people like that out there. You know, there's the America First movement and they're young Zoomers that reject this stuff. But we just, people like that just get censored so brutally to prop up these astroturf figures, PragerU, The Daily Wire, Breitbart. And like I said, you go through each one of them and there's always, you can trace it back and there's an Israeli firster at the top of these organizations. Mm-hmm. So we can't have a proper conversation about anything in the West while this is going on, because it always gets directed back towards this state in the Middle East.
People can go to, there's a good TED Talk. If you type in TED Talk and astroturfing, I recommend people look into this because it's real important. Human life is precious life. This is something that is very important. Doesn't matter if it's from a child from one side or the other. You know, these are innocent human lives that are being lost. And it seems like every time this discussion, have you noticed, via B. Piers Morgan, via B. On any one of these news channels, the first thing they want to get into is having the Muslim, the one who's there, trying to speak up. And on this, they right away are pulling this. Do you condemn the, of course, we condemn killing of innocent human beings. This is something clear. But then they shift the focus, the talk. But in another direction, and they don't do the same thing. If somebody from the IDF or somebody on this side comes out, they don't ask them to condemn the indiscriminate bombing of, what is it, like 50% are, is it 50% are almost like children in Gaza?
Yeah, yeah. You've got children, most very young children as well.
Young children. I mean, they're innocent. They have nothing to
and
to
it's
do with
just
it.
Incredible as well, because I've seen, I mean, I've lost count this week of how many Zionists I've seen on Twitter effectively justifying genocide. I mentioned Joel Pollack, the senior editor of Breitbart, saying level Gaza. These people come on and they're supposedly conservatives that are supposed to be concerned about the West, and they're making these arguments like everyone in Gaza is collectively responsible for Hamas. We need to glass Gaza, just wipe it out. They're talking about wiping out 2 million people that are confined to the space. And this is like the most extreme kind of discourse imaginable, where you can literally come on social media and advocate for genocide. I mean, what could be more extreme than that? We hear all these terms like hate speech and why we need to silence the internet because of white supremacy. Well, you have these Zionist ethnic supremacists on social media freely advocating genocide as a form of racial revenge. But then you have conservatives, someone like Nick Fuentes, he's censored, okay, he said some controversial things. You could find the most controversial stuff he said. He's never advocated genocide in an entire people. But somehow this is accepted. It doesn't make any sense in the terms that these people treat the rest of our politics. Like I said, Jonathan Greenblatt, he's the main person responsible for censorship, his Anti-Defamation League, which is an explicitly Jewish activist group. And he is trying to censor people for pretty moderate beliefs. He led this advertising boycott of Twitter when Elon Musk took over that Elon has said now cost Twitter 60% of its advertising revenue. And he did this to try and force them to censor voices, mostly anti-Zionist voices. But he's going on TV now and he's saying that this is the worst thing to happen since Nagasaki. He's defending this Zionist far-right government while he pushes, far-left woke beliefs in the West. There'll be no statement from the ADL condemning the people that marched in New York with Israeli flags saying we need to wipe out Gaza. But they did do a big, huge research article about the fact that there was some far-right people in the West on Telegram that were sympathetic to Hamas. That's the big focus. But the fact that you have actual Jewish supremacists that are openly telling cameras they're genocidal and they want to wipe out Arabs, that gets a pass.
Mm-hmm. Here's many have quoted this defense minister saying, I've ordered a complete siege on the Gaza Strip. There will be no electricity, no food, no fuel. Everything is closed. We are fighting human animals. So this goes back into like now dehumanizing children, human beings. And let's just go ahead and take a look. When you do that, then you make the other side look like they're just barbarians, and you try to take that human element away from it, and now there's no feeling for what's happening. And people can, let's look at some of these videos. I mean, this is just a man now. He's sitting, his whole, he's saying my house, my everything is pretty much gone. This is an aerial view of this, I believe, is Gaza. Is that right?
Yeah, and even, I mean, that this is the justification.
What does that mean? Can you unpackage that? Because some people, they don't get these terms, these words. Okay, what does that mean? It's just like they're barricaded in this area. You got how many? Was it almost 2 million people?
Yeah, more. It's like 2.2 million, I believe.
And they're stuck. They can't leave. Everything's been, they're stuck there. So this is like,
and it's not just that things can't get out, things can't get in, right? Like, yeah. I said, this is 5 miles wide, 25 miles long, 2 million people packed into that tiny space. And it's a brutal blockade. They have this no-go zone around the area that if you step into it, Israeli soldiers will fire on you. People get killed every year for going into that area. The sea is also blockaded. And in the past, a few years ago, there was a humanitarian aid ship that tried to send aid to Gaza that was fired on by Israeli commandos in the sea. And they've enforced these brutal blockades. So one of them was when people were flying kites over the walls into Israel, these like fire kites that actually didn't do that much damage to Israel. It was basically an act of desperation by young people in Gaza. But they imposed this brutal blockade where they weren't allowing in really essential supplies, like you couldn't transport things like plasters or medical equipment. So they're totally blockaded. It is an open-air prison. According to some estimates, 60% of the population is unemployed. And that's been the case for decades there. So these people are really in a totally hopeless position. And yeah, I've seen Zionists, this is how they justify it. They say, we gave them a day to evacuate the women and children. So now, effectively, anyone that's there deserves their fate if they get hit with a Israeli rocket, or, you know, if our soldiers go in and clean house. But it's like, where are they meant to evacuate to? 2.1 million people locked in this effectively a concentration camp. But this is, like I said, this stuff is normalized. I mean, I saw a member of the Israeli Knesset was saying that every person that lives in Gaza is guilty. There are no civilians. I saw another one who's a member of the ruling Likud party was advocating using what he called a doomsday weapon and firing a Jericho missile into Gaza, which would just wipe out massive region, kill hundreds of thousands of people. But again, this is the kind of supremacist attitudes that are normal in Israel, this Jewish supremacism amongst this ruling party, where you'll just get elected politicians casually talking about genociding these people. And it's very jarring to see.
I like how you differentiate, because it's not a Jewish Muslim thing. You have Christians who are there.
As a Palestinian Christian, I have many problems with Christian Zionists. First of all, this is an ideology that completely ignored me and ignored my people, and to a certain degree even dismissed us and dehumanized us. Speaking about an empty land or Palestine as a land without a people, that is dehumanizing to our presence. If you believe that God brought the Jews to this land and they have a divine right to this land and this is fulfillment of prophecy, then what about me? What should I do? Should I just leave? Should I pack and leave? Is this what you are proposing? In other words, this is an ideology that completely ignored our presence and even dismiss that presence. Many times they would tell us, go to Jordan. Many times they would say, there is no such a thing as a Palestinian. Other times they will even say, we are an obstacle to the second coming of Christ. And in that process, they have ignored our rights. And maybe one of my biggest problems with Christian Zionism is that it is devoid of justice. Because what about the current military occupation to our land and to our people? What about the many injustices and the discriminative laws of the state of Israel towards Palestinians? I mean, it's a state that says that the right for self-determination is exclusive to the Jewish people only. How can you as a Christian support that? What about the rights of refugees to returns, or about land when you confiscate land from Palestinian families, sometimes Palestinian Christian families, to build a Jewish settlement on that land? How can you be as a Christian okay with that action?
You mentioned the spitting on Christians. You mentioned the treatment of Christians even there in this area. So this is not something that is, you know, you have a long history where before this, I've had rabbis on.
Many Jews believe wrongly that Zionism is either part of Judaism or is compatible with Judaism or is even the main part of Judaism. All of those are actually false. Zionism was created to negate Judaism. Zionism was created to replace Judaism. The differences between Zionism and Judaism are vast. They are vast and profound. The propaganda that the Zionists have churned out for the past 100 years have confused and conflated Zionism and Judaism such that when the average person walks down the street, he thinks that the state of Israel is the Jewish state, he thinks that Zionism is Judaism, and he doesn't know the difference. This group of Jews here are students of the students of the late Satmar Rabbi, Rabbi Yoel Teitelbaum, who was the greatest disseminator of the clarity regarding the difference between Judaism and Zionism.
We go to Muslim countries now because it's a requirement, as the chief rabbi of Palestine, Rabbi Teitelbaum, said, we are required to let the world know that these Zionists and their state does not speak for the Jewish people, and they are not in any way have the right to use Judaism to oppress, to steal the land from the Palestinian people. These people who are good to us, and we babysat each other's children, we live together, they have no right to steal from them. The Torah doesn't permit you to steal. The Zionist wants to confuse, to make it that there's a religious conflict. Nothing to do with religion. On the contrary, the Muslims and the Arab people were for us, our friends and our patrons, the ones who protect us and provide a safe haven. And they should not be full victim of this evil movement of Zionism. With God's help, if you will remove this impediment to peace, Zionism, a relatively new ideology, so 100 mere years, then the Jews and Muslims and Christians were living for hundreds and hundreds of years, and it was never a problem.
I had I don't know if you heard of Miko Pilid.
He was a rabbi who lived in Jerusalem. He was one of the anti-Zionist rabbis, like Rabbi Weiss that you interviewed. And he was interviewed by a student of his, and the student said to him, if you were in charge today, what would be the first thing that you would do? And this rabbi said, the first thing I would do is I would ask the Palestinians to come back. And the student says, why? What are you talking about? They're terrorists. They want to kill us. And the rabbi, his name is Rabbi Amram Blau. And the rabbi said, who told you that? Who told you that the Arabs were going to kill us? We had great relations with the Muslims and the Arabs back in the day. You know, his family lived in Hebron and his half family lived in Jerusalem that always had, you know, Jewish minorities. He said, we had great relations. We shared the same values. We shared a similar culture. You know, we all treat each other with respect. It was only when the Zionists came at the beginning of the 20th century that the terrorism began, that the violence began. And it was initiated not by the Palestinians, not by the Arabs and the Muslims, but by the Zionists.
Israeli, also Jewish, who's also speaking out against this. And he talks about, like many, that Jews, Christians, and Muslims were actually living in this part of the world. They were living there for centuries in peace. And it's not until recently, until this was started happening, that this land was stolen. And now you have all these injustices that are happening, that now this is causing what's erupting in this part of the world. It's very sad to see.
Yeah, and you know, that clip you played at the beginning, Gabor Mate, he's very critical of Israel. You have people like Norman Finkelstein, one of the mm-hmm. most influential academics who's Jewish, who's critical of Israel. Noam Chomsky, Ilan Pape, who wrote a book, The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine. That's kind of the authoritative book on the Nakba. So yeah, it's not a question of all Jews, but it is an issue of there is this ideology of Jewish supremacism that is very common within the Israeli government, within this far-right Likudnik government, and within these extremist Talmudic groups like the Temple Institute, who this guy representing it says that Israel is fighting orcs.
You guys are worshiping one Jew. That's a mistake. You should be worshiping every single one of us, because the Jewish people in the land of Israel are the bulwark against the orcs.
And says that everyone outside
Israel...
What are orcs?
What are orcs?
Orcs, as in, you know, the kind of ghoulish monsters from Lord of the Rings. That's how he refers to non-Jews in the podcast he was on. And he says that all non-Jews should worship Jewish people collectively.
Why, explain this to me. I cannot wrap my head around this. because Muslims, we love and revere Jesus as one of the mightiest messengers. We can't say one disrespectful thing about him. When we say Jesus, we say peace be upon him. Obviously, we don't agree that he's God or literal son of God. We believe, like in the Bible, he's called a prophet, he's a messenger. That's a different discussion debate. But what I'm saying here is that we have such respect for his blessed mother, Mary, Maryam. There's a whole chapter in the Quran named after her. Okay, my point is, why is there such a connection now here with this other group who disrespects Jesus, who talks, you know, evil about his mother, and now you have Christians, I believe, what is it like, what's the percentage-wise of Christians who are actually Zionists now, and they've taken, like, Muslims almost as the enemy, and they're over here, you know, getting spit on, disrespected, and whatnot, and we'd love peace for all of us, you know, to work together on many of the common things that we have in common. But this just doesn't like make sense to me, you know, that you have these evangelical Christians who are out there and they're propping this up and helping this to happen, most of these injustices. And what are your thoughts on this? Why is this?
It doesn't make sense that you have these people telling us that the ultimate conflict is Christianity versus Islam. I mean, like you said, Jesus is revered as a prophet in Islam. If you look at what the Talmud, which is what these people follow, you know, they have a lot of religious books. It's the Torah isn't their main book. It's the Babylonian Talmud. And if you look at the Talmud, what it says about Jesus is,
we don't have to get into it, but people can.
We don't have to get into it, but
I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
it would be an understatement, right? But yeah, unfortunately, you have these Christian Zionists that think they have to fulfill this prophecy by giving these Talmudic Jews a homeland in Israel and by supporting any kind of oppressive action they do against Palestinians. Now, there's an interesting history on that. You know, there was the so-called Schofield Reference Bible that was made very popular in the U.S. after mm-hmm. the First World War that had a lot of this dispensationalist stuff about, you know, how history is broken down into eras and it's necessary to bring about this Jewish state in the Middle East. Oh. And people are kind of hopped up on this stuff. Now, that's not common theology in Catholicism or in Orthodoxy, but it has spread in a lot of these evangelical churches. And again, you know, I would suggest if you look into the history of that and why that spread and why
from the Schofield, I heard something about this. This kicked off with the Schofield Bible.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And again, I'd suggest, you know, if you look at the kind of interest that promoted that and wanted Christians to embrace that, you know, again, it's these Zionist influences that wow. certainly want to have Christians under their thumb like that. But yeah, I mean, theologically, historically, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, there was a pope, I don't know, was it Benedict XV? There was one of the popes that said the Holy Land could never belong to modern day Jews. And, you know, if you look at Christian theology, I mean, Israel, the people of Israel, Jesus brought about the new covenant. So Israel is supposed to be, that's the covenant that Jesus brought about. That would be, if you're a Catholic, Israel is the Catholic Church. It's not this state in the Middle East that is this Zionist political entity that you have to support of people that deny Christ. So mm-hmm. it doesn't make any sense, like theologically, historically. It's very much, again, we talk about AstroTurf. This is very much a modern phenomenon. It's very much tied to the US and their support for Israel. But unfortunately, this has captured a lot of people. But I do think a lot of Christians are waking up to this.
What I was going to say. I see a lot of Christians who are pushing back and waking other Christians up mm-hmm. About this. Yeah.
If you look at young people, if you look at the trends with young people, like I said, there are a lot of people in the West that are tired of liberalism and are looking for something more meaningful. And I think you see that even with things like the popularity of the Tate brothers and even Jordan Peterson when he was popular. But if you look at the trends, like young people that go back to Christianity, it tends more to be more illiberal, like Catholicism, Orthodoxy, something that has more of a tradition. And also, if you look at support for Israel, it's very much a kind of generational thing. The boomers, definitely big supporters of Israel in the US. But as you go down to generations and you get to the younger conservatives, they're very much ambivalent about Israel. And that's a concern for Israel because, you know, they hop the left up on this anti-colonialism stuff. Now that they're opposed to Israel for that reason, and there's a lot of first, second generation immigrants in the West that are opposed to Israel. So they need the support of the Republican Party specifically. They need the support of conservatives. But if you go down to the younger generation of conservatives, and I think the internet has a lot to do with it, and you know, being able to get these narratives out there about how Israel hasn't been a friend to the US, you see that support begins to collapse, and you see that conservatives of the younger generation are much more nationalistic, they're much more America first. They don't understand these generational conflicts and why the US should be involved in the Middle East. So if you look under the surface, you know, there are ways in which these traditional sources of support, the Christian Zionism, the Republican Party, they're slowly getting undermined by being able to spread narratives and being able to speak freely. And the internet has had a lot to do with that.
Mm-hmm. We got a few more minutes. I want to just touch upon, this is a longer discussion. I actually spoke about this some time ago, about this third temple. It was something that was kind of like, oh, this conspiracy and this, that, and the other. But this is what you were pointing out. This is becoming more mainstream now. Is that correct? With this, with the political party that's now in place, they're actually mm-hmm. trying to go ahead and build this temple. Where is it at right now? Where are they at right now?
It's obviously very, it's a very touchy subject for everyone, the Christians and the Muslims and the Jews. So the Israeli government won't come out and say like, yeah, we're going to demolish the mosque and build a temple. I mean, that would really set things off, right? Especially when they're trying to normalize relations.
But this is something people can go look into, right? This is not something that...
I mean, you can just look up the Temple Institute. And, you know, the quotes I was pulling from where the guy was calling people orcs and saying everyone needs to worship Jewish people... That guy, that's on his official podcast, Rabbi Chaim Richman. Okay, you can look that up. And he was head of the Temple Institute for 30 years. And this is all documented. They even have a lab in Texas, I believe, where they're working.
So people can verify this. This is something.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're working with embryo selection to breed this red calf that they have to sacrifice on the Temple Mount. And then they can build this third temple. And you can just find multiple statements from people that have held very high positions in the Israeli government. Like I said, the Israeli government might not come out and say, yeah, we support this, because that would just declare them an enemy to all Muslims and Christians alike. But you can find statements from individual ministers where they say, like, aspirationally, yes, in the long run, we would like to see the third temple built. Yes, that's how we'll know when the Zionist project has succeeded, this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And these are the groups, you know, this attack by Hamas was called the Al-Aqsa Flood, because in their statement they released, they said it was a response to the rise in tensions related to Al-Aqsa Mosque. And what was kicking this off, again, you can find all of this verified, is these Talmudic extremist groups were storming Al-Aqsa Mosque, forcing worshippers out. They're declaring to the Muslims, we're going to tear this down, we're going to build the third temple. You can find this footage. They're telling the Arabs there's going to be a second Nakba. So these are the groups that are driving this. It's this supremacist ideology where these people think that they should be worshipped. They think that they're the center of history. You know, they don't believe that the covenant is for all mankind. They believe that it's about them and that they have a right to extinguish other people's holy sites and destroy other people's places of worship to bring this about. And, you know, like I said, if they were a fringe cult, it would be one thing. But when they have support within the Israeli government, I think it shows how extreme the Zionist project has become.
Mm-hmm. Recently, we had... one of the discussions of the year on the Patrick Ben David podcast. I went down there myself. I met Patrick, and I would really recommend that he gets, if he wants to talk and dwell into these topics, he talks a lot about politics and others. Would you be willing to go on? I would recommend that Patrick Ben David, he has a vision of Muslims and Christians working together on a common good, on the things that we have in common. I really respect this vision, and I really agree with it. We have a lot of things in common, and we have many things that are affecting ourselves, our families, our community. And now we have these things that are now a point of contention. And I think you've made some really, really important points. And what would you say to someone like Patrick Ben David and others? A lot of has a huge Christian following and others. I make this example. I had also a Christian who was a huge hater of Islam and Muslims. I don't know if you've heard of Owen Benjamin.
My main thing is to help people not hate so many good-hearted Muslims that are withstanding evil, and they are the type of people you want to root for, these scholarly, beautiful Muslim people. Don't let the media paint, you know, a fifth of the planet as people that deserve to be bombed as a sacrifice.
Well, so we want to help with that. We want to help because there's a lot of hate out there. And go ahead.
Yeah, there's a lot of programming that I've realized has happened in America of the anti-Muslim programming, because we all know there's Pharisees in every religion. There's some bad Muslims, some bad Christians, some bad Jews, and everything. Because I used to think that Muslims were the boogeyman. Something that really changed my perspective was when a Muslim friend of mine, I heard him say, Jesus, peace be upon him. And
I had always thought that you guys hated Jesus, you know, and that was, and that blew my mind, because I listened to Ben Shapiro on Joe Rogan talk about how Jesus Christ was a common criminal and was killed for rebelling against Rome, which is this insane statement. And then my Muslim friend would say, Jesus, peace be upon him. And I was like, huh, that kind of made it through the programming.
And once he started to see, like, wow, Muslims, they say, when they say Jesus, they say terms of respect, peace be upon him. You know, they don't disrespect him, but this other group does. Blah, 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 blah. And then he was like, man, you know, when he started to really investigate, he saw, like, he was programmed, and he got unprogrammed. And I think many of these people, listening to people like yourself, you know, giving much of the facts, debunking much of the atrocity propaganda that's out there. What would you say to someone like, would you go on a PDB podcast? Would you sit and talk with a Patrick Bendavid and many of his followers that are out there, if they're confused, right? They're confused. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't agree with $3 billion. We have homeless people. We have sick people. We have communities that look like they've been war torn in our country. And I'm an American also. I was born here. I want the best for my country. I don't want our money being thrown out when we have issues here. Most Americans, I had a Christian lady also, if Americans only knew, if they only knew, they wouldn't agree with all this money. How much is it? $3 billion a year going out?
$3.9 billion. It's actually more if you look into it.
Imagine what we can do with that money here, right? So what would you say to the average Christian and other people who people are being programmed in the wrong direction? Well, what would you say to them, and where would you direct them to get the proper education on this matter here?
Well, I would just repeat that the conversation in the West is very centrally controlled by figures that are very focused on this one specific topic. You know, I come at this first and foremost from the position of a nationalist. I value, like, real cultural, ethnic, religious diversity, and you know, I want to preserve my identity. And, you know, I'm getting a lot of Muslim followers now because I take that to its logical conclusion. I say, well, you know, I want an Ireland for the Irish, and I think Palestinians should have Palestine, and they shouldn't have to be forced out of their homeland. And you know, a lot of them, they see, oh well, you know, you're taking this kind of nationalist stance in the West. You must be anti-Islam. You know, you must support these wars in the Middle East. It's like, no, of course not. You know, people in the West, we want to be left alone. We want to have our own cultures and traditions. It's not us that's pushing this. It's these Zionist figures that have captured the conversation. I went through all of the lists of big influencers. And we get redirected all of the time. If people in the West are concerned about losing their identity and culture, and if they want to preserve that, if they do something like oppose immigration, they get distracted. They say, no, the problem is actually Islam, and we need to reform Islam. You know, this was popular. You had these figures like Tommy Robinson, where he was representing people that were concerned about multiculturalism. And then he said, actually, the problem is Islam, and Islam needs a reformation, and we need to make the Muslims good liberals and feminists, and then everything will be fine. And so he puts people, and these figures put us normal Westerners in opposition to Muslims, as if we have to do this imperial project to change other people's religion, just because we want to preserve our traditions and identities. So the conversation is totally manipulated. If there were people that could actually express that and could actually express a proper, even if you look at the US, if someone expressed a proper America First position, they'd say, why are we supporting Israel when it bombed the USS Liberty, an American ship? Why are we supporting Israel when it's creating all these enemies for us? When, you know, the previous terror attacks on the US have been justified by their ongoing support for the apartheid state in Israel. So I think if there was a proper conversation, if people could have an open dialogue about this, things would turn very quickly. And that's what you have to keep in mind, is there are very powerful interests that work very hard and throw a lot of money into controlling this conversation. As far as where to look, I mean, you can follow me on Twitter. You'll find the people I retweet. There are still some good voices out there. You know, I was banned off Twitter for a year and a half. So like I said, we get suppressed hard, but you can follow me. Jake Shields is a good example. These are guys that were pushing the ban the ADL tag as well, trying to end the Zionist censorship of the internet. Lucas Gage is another one who I repost a lot. And, you know, we are out there. There are people that care about the West, want to preserve our traditions, our identities, but see that the problem is not Islam, or the problem is not any individual people. The problem is this supremacist Zionist ideology that controls our discourse and then creates this destabilized, creates these wars and this destabilization in the Middle East.
And you
waking people up about that.
And you have, I've interviewed a lot of Jews rabbis and whatnot, like I said earlier, who make this distinction mm-hmm. and who are against this same movement, Jews mm-hmm. themselves. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're down for the PBD podcast? If
absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely. Let's get everybody who's watching, send this, go ahead and retweet this, send this to our friend Patrick Ben David, and he can have another fair and balanced discussion with somebody like you who's very well informed. I want to thank you very much. God bless you for being with us and helping to share much of this information. That's very important.
God bless, and thanks for having me on.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. Peace.
We've been told that they're out to kill us all.
Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters. We went to the streets to ask Americans about Islam. Here's what they said. Do you know anything about Islam?
No.
Do you know anything about Islam?
No, sadly.
Do you know anything about Islam?
Not really.
Do you know anything about Islam?
No, sorry.
Do you know what Islam means?
Islam? No. We've been told that they're out to kill us all.
That's what you've been told, that Muslims are out to kill you all?
Well, that's what they say on TV.
Anything.
I know it's in the Middle East, isn't it?
Well, then you're going to have four wives.
Brothers and sisters, as you can see, there are so many Americans who don't know about Islam. We need your help to change that. Help us to build the Deen Center, the first mega Dawah center in America. Click to donate right now. May God Almighty Allah reward all of you. Not leave without giving you a gift. If you're not yet Muslim and you're tuning in to see what these Muslims are talking about and you like a free copy of the Quran, go ahead and visit thedeenshow.com. We'll take care of the postage and everything and get it delivered to you. And if you still have some questions about Islam, call us at 1-800-662-4752. We'll see you next time. Until then, peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.